council meeting for October 3rd, 2017. The time right now is 7 p.m. Ms. Atkinson, will you please call the roll?
Certainly. Councilmembers present, establishing Ingram, are Scarborough, Rasmussen, Davis, Camp, and Gamble, and Hanford, walking in.
Thank you. And I did receive word from Councilmember Cutterback that she's running about 15 minutes late, so we'll announce for the record as she enters chambers. Councilmember Hanford, will you please lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. First item we have on the agenda this evening is a public hearing. This is potential revenue sources preliminary budget. Ms. Hassler.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
So what we have before you this evening is the public hearing on the 2018 potential revenue sources, as well as to take comments if anybody wants with regards to the proposed budget. I'm not going to read the agenda bill to you because you guys have already had that, and obviously I don't want to read the budget document to you either. But a few things that I did want to point out. Again, all revenues for all funds total over $89 million, almost $90 million. That includes transfers in and out between funds, which we do have listed in the budget document on page... Oops, but I have that marked if I do. On page 17, that also includes over $37 million in beginning fund balances, which is available for use if council so chooses. For the general fund specifically, we are looking at over $13.6 million in new revenue coming into the city. With the beginning fund balance, you're looking at almost $17.5 million to fund your operations in the general fund. Having said that, specifically, I want to point out property taxes. It is traditional here for the city of Monroe not to take their allowable 1% increase in the property taxes. And again, for 2018, the mayor is recommending that we again do not take that 1%. So the growth that you see in the property tax revenues over 2017 budget has to do with new construction. The new construction, the preliminary assessed valuations that came in from the county is that new construction is pretty close to $75 million that has been added to our tax rolls since last year. So that is why we're looking at that 3.19% increase in property taxes. With that, I will turn it over to the mayor for the public hearing.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hassler. All right, we now have a public hearing. This is the public testimony portion of the public hearing. So I'm going to open that up. We didn't have anybody that signed up to speak. Is there anybody that would like to come forward to speak this evening on this item? Anybody else? Okay, Council, I see none. Councilmember Hanford.
I move to close the public testimony portion of the public hearing.
Second.
We have a first from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Gamble to close the public testimony portion of the public hearing. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 6-0. Any discussion, Council? If not, there's a proposal to close the public hearing. Councilmember Gamble.
I move to close the public hearing.
Second.
We have a first from Councilmember Gamble, a second from Councilmember Hanford to close the public hearing. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 6-0. Thank you very much. We're going to go ahead and move on to comments from citizens. This is the time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter that is subject to the public hearing. We do have a sign up sheet out front. We have two people who have signed up to speak. And first we have Tom, is it Ever?
Ever,
yeah. Ever. Please come up forward and state your name for the record. Thank you.
Tom Ever. So I'm here today. I'm one of the owners of the
Eastside Masonry site. It's a piece of land over on the corner of Highway 2 and Firelands Boulevard. We've been working diligently with the city and Ben Swanson and the Planning Commission on the critical area, the update to the critical areas amendment. And just here, you know, it's a site, a heavily used industrial site. It's been used that way for, gosh, 100 or so years. And there's been some issues with sort of in the redevelopment and working with Ben and the city. And this sort of helps us get over at least some of those hurdles. And so here, just to voice our support for approval of that amendment.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. The next person that we have who signed up to speak this evening is Mr. Walker, Mr. Jake Walker.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Ford. And just get your name for the record, please.
Jacob Walker. Awesome. My name is Jacob Walker. I'm a citizen of Monroe. I'm running for council here. The reason I'm speaking tonight is just because I'm trying to make it a big point. What I've discovered is a lot of the local business owners, some of them don't live in Monroe, but they can be some of the people that are most affected by the policy decisions that are made here. A couple of council meetings ago when we went over the idea of a business advisory council, one thing that I want to add, I didn't know when it would be appropriate, but a thing that I'm like consistently hearing is that there's a lot of businesses who aren't aware of certain happenings with regards to policy and infrastructure that like are looking for some type of utility or avenue of communication with the city. So I just wanted to recommend that when that discussion comes up with the council and the structure of it, that a big basis of it is communication from the city to businesses about policy decisions that are going to affect them. So that's all I wanted to add, but thank you guys.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jake.
All right, is there anybody else who would like to come forward to speak to the council this evening? Anybody at all? Okay, with that said, we're going to go ahead and move on. We have a need for an executive session this evening. We're going to take the executive session a little bit earlier in the agenda. We have two executive sessions. One is listed on the agenda as agency litigation, RCW 42-30-110-1i, and also pricing of property, RCW 42.30.110, subsection 1, subsection C. We will be in session, executive session for approximately 10 minutes, and we will be taking action as early in the agenda anyway after executive session. So we are now in executive session for approximately 10 minutes. Thank you. Okay, we're back in session, and please let the record show that Councilmember Cutaback entered chambers at 7:15 during executive session. Welcome. All right, the next item that we have on our agenda this evening is consent agenda. Councilmember Gamble.
I move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
I have a motion to approve the consent agenda from Councilmember Gamble. And a second from Councilmember Davis. Any discussion on the motion to approve the consent agenda? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you. Next item that we have on the agenda this evening is unfinished business. Item number one, this is AB 1713, ordinance number 021. 17 sub for substitution. Approving Raspberry Hill rezone reading. This is quasi judicial, and Mr. Swanson, you have it.
Mr. Mayor, my understanding is that the city clerk led the council through the appearance of fairness disclosure process when this matter was on council for first reading. I think that in the interest of expediency, it would be appropriate simply to ask if any council member would feel the need to change his or her response to any of the questions that were asked previously, or otherwise have something to disclose, either as an ex parte communication or anything otherwise subject to the appearance of fairness doctrine.
Councilmember Gamble.
No, I still own property next to it, so I'll be recusing myself during discussion.
Thank you. That's a fair question. It would be also appropriate to view the room during the discussion. Thank you. Any other council member? Thank you.
Yeah. Councilmember Hanford.
Yeah, I believe there was a council member missing last week. I could be wrong.
You were that council member?
No, I was.
Oh, Councilmember Davis.
I am.
Just want to make sure we don't.
Thank you.
That's a
cross the
T. Very appropriate clarification, Mr. Mayor. My recommendation would be to briefly open the floor. Any
interested party of record who wishes to challenge any defense number based on the disclosures previously or tonight.
Okay. The floor is open for anybody to come forward and challenge any of the council members for taking part in the rezone item that's coming up. Anybody at all? I see none. Thank you. So, go ahead.
Great.
Thank you, Mayor. Council.
Just give a presentation and be for the discussion.
Sure. So last time I presented this at first reading, it was there were a couple different items missing off or that needed to be corrected on the both the ordinance and the findings of fact. And so those are now corrected. What we did on the ordinance is we added the address and the parcel number. And then on the finding of facts, it was mistakenly placed as legislative as opposed to quasi-judicial. And one additional thing, I handed these out at the last Planning Commission meeting, was the draft Planning Commission minutes. So we just went ahead and added those in as an attachment. And so those are the major changes from the last time. And just to recap, this is a rezone to take for an area called Raspberry Hill to take 26 lots up to 28 lots with the rezone. And it would be shifting it from UR 9600 to an R4 rezone.
Councilmember Scarborough. Please let the record show that Councilmember Gamble is out of the chambers. Councilmember Sarver.
Okay. Being the junior guy and somewhat naive on some of this, we have a ordinance that says it's 28 homes, which is what R9600.
The R4.
And we want to change it in order to change 28
homes? From 26 to 28.
Yes, well, we're changing it to what, R4?
Correct.
Okay. And what we're doing is on that parcel, which is, here's my concern. As Mr. Niemela has come to our city council meeting and expressed his concern for the city's continually proving houses in the north end of town that creates the traffic and or congestion coming down into town either through Chain Lake Road or 191st to Chain Lake Road or through Sinclair Heights. And we have kind of told Mr. Niemela and other people who brought this to the council that we can't change those people's right to develop their property, and I understand that, because of our ordinances. But we are also changing for the rezone in order to accommodate the developers to get two more houses on a lot. About two or three more lots on that side of the road that are subject to a development as well. And I'm just wondering, we have some other things around town where we have questioned the rezoning to accommodate the developers. But in this case, I understand that the planning committee has said it's okay. But I question whether we might be sticking our neck out by continually giving in to the developers to get them two more lots, to get us two more permits, to get us two more houses on the roll, to get to the comp plan. And I wasn't around for the comp plan, and I'm very naive on the comp plan at this point. Are we doing the right thing as a city council? And I'm posing that question to the city council because of my lack of knowledge on it. And maybe I know that Councilman Gamble and I have had a short conversation with Mr. Niemela when he was here. And it helped me understand a great deal. But I'm still asking that question. Maybe other people on the city council or you or Zach can help me understand if we are doing ourselves.
Councilmember Scarborough, just a second. I think Mr. Lowe has a couple words.
So, Council, just to clarify, did you have a conversation with one of the parties of record to this proceeding? Well, was pending before the council?
No, I had a conversation with Mr. Nemo about the traffic that was coming off of those developments down into town.
And your conversation did not involve the rezone per se. It was more just a general discussion regarding development.
Correct.
Generally. Okay. And just as a reminder for the council, as you're considering this rezone proposal, the council should be confining its analysis to the facts and the record that were created before the Planning Commission, because this is a site-specific quasi-judicial closed record matter. The universe of information that you should be taking into account is that was created during the administrative proceedings below, and I believe that the staff did forward all of that to you for your information. But to the extent that there were other facts that you may have become aware of, I think it's important to confine your analysis tonight to the materials that are in the record.
Okay. Have I gotten outside that?
It doesn't sound like it. It sounded like your conversation was on a different topic, but I just wanted to remind the council of that legal point.
Okay. Those were my questions.
Thank you. Any other questions or motion from council? Councilmember Camp?
Thank you. No motion. All legal documents are completed up to spec. Which was my concern last week.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yep. Thank you.
Anything further from council? Councilmember Cutterback.
Well, I will make a motion. I approved the first reading last week, and the Planning Commission approved it. It's consistent with the comp plan. It's consistent with our MMC, and it meets CEPA. So I'll move to adopt ordinance number 021-2017 sub, amending the zoning designation of the property located at 18516 134th Street, Southeast Snohomish County, tax parcel number 28063600200800, commonly known as the Raspberry Hill property, from urban residential 9600, UR 9600, to residential 4 dwellings per acre, R4, setting forth supported findings, providing for severability, and fixing a time when the same shall be effective. Become effective.
I have a motion from Councilmember Cutback and a second for the request action as written in Agenda Bill Number 17-153. Discussion on the motion. Councilmember Kemp.
Thank you. While I acknowledge the track issues, and while I have not spoken to the individual you mentioned, this does meet the requirements, does fall within the legal bill that we're being requested to review. As the city attorney pointed out, we are limited in what we can look at. So based on that, I think it's, well, not the best, it is the correct action to move forward in having this vote.
Thank you. Any other discussion on the motion? Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. We moved with it last week, and Ben, thank you for making those adjustments that we talked about last week and adding it to this week. Really appreciate that.
All right. Any other discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Thank you. Can somebody please let Councilmember Gamble know that we're on this item? Thank you, Mr. Swanson. The next item on the agenda, we are now moving into new business item number one. This is AB 17-154, ordinance number 022-2017, amending MMC 2005. Critical areas first reading. Mr. Swanson.
Good, thank you, Mayor Council. So the last time the City Council saw the critical areas ordinance was right around the beginning of the year. It's maybe January, February time frame. And at that time, Council had questions about some Department of Ecology comments that accompanied it. And Council was correct to identify those comments by Department of Ecology. One thing, and you'll see this said several times in the memo and also several times, is the best available science. So Department of Ecology, in accordance with the Growth Management Act, we're required every year to go through and reevaluate our areas.
And with that evaluation, we have to use what's called best available science. And so in this case, what ecology does, so each jurisdiction doesn't have to go out and start from scratch and create their own scientific theory and prove it. They develop a best available science document and develop some model code for you to go by. In that original presentation by staff, there were three items that ecology recommended changes on. And two of those had to do with best available science. The third one was a water typing system. That is, you'll see in the exhibits, that was a conversation I had with the Department of Ecology. They requested more for consistency as opposed to a best available science issue, where it's not a best available science issue. It's just a tomato-tomato issue. And because we have so many existing documentation that uses this different type of verbiage, it would have caused a lot of confusion. Some will change down the road, but it didn't actually impact our ability to meet best available science. Our second one was our buffer widths. And so what the city had was, it was developed under some older best available science by Department of Ecology that had buffer widths depending on, it wasn't just based on habitat type, but several other values, where you have a wetland scientist goes out with this form, they evaluate the actual wetland itself, they write down scores for each one, and then they come up with various scores in various categories, and then that's when they determine their buffer width. So ecology came back and said, we're actually revising this, we're going to be going to, and it's kind of a difficult thing to originally explain, but it's on page 50 of 78 in your agenda bill, and what it is, it essentially gives two tables. And so those buffer widths, one table is if you have basically an intact buffer where it's, you know, vegetated, you can go to these basically smaller buffer widths. If it's destroyed or needs a lot of improvement, they require larger buffer widths. In both cases, there's a likelihood that the existing buffers within the city of Monroe will increase just on people's parcels that you know, for future development. That was one thing that Planning Commission had a real difficult time with. And so what talking with Planning Commission, I went back to Department of Ecology and tried to work through some of these problems to get to somewhere in the middle. And so that also came up with the Department of Ecology's third comments about buffer reductions. Ecology doesn't allow buffer reductions anymore. They said that's a no-go, it doesn't comply with best available science. In their view, what they've done in their best available science review is they take and they look at all these different buffer widths, and then they determine, okay, what are these optimum buffers? And then from that they say, well, these are optimum, what can we reduce these down to and still provide the habitat value that's required for these wetlands? So in their mind, they've already reduced these buffers down. And so anything beyond that basically goes against their discovery in the document. And so what we did in Planning Commission was, actually, Mr. Editor spoke to the first one that I'll go over, is one of the things that we're looking at is what happens when you have an area like East Side Masonry that has existing impacts. You have if you look on a piece of paper and you average, you take a buffer and spread it out away from that wetland along there or stream, what does this cover? In the East Side Masonry's case, it covers a lot of like parking lot and building. And so when they first brought this to our attention, they said, you know, we have this big site right now, but if we apply all these buffers and the new buffers, we're basically going to have this thin strip of land that we can develop. And so they brought forward some language, and we work with the Department of Ecology that created these innovative development designs. And so what that essentially allows an applicant to do is use previously impacted area. So if you have a parking lot and you want to put a building on it, in some cases it may be viewed as increasing the nonconformity within that buffer. Well, the way ecology has agreed to in this document, they basically said you can reuse that. You're going to essentially take that new buffer and pay for it through such as a wetland mitigation bank, and that's a new section in the document. We actually have one located just outside city limits. Or you do on-site mitigation, where you take some degraded buffer and you do some plantings and you increase the habitat value. And wetland mitigation banks, since I brought them up, I'll talk about them real quick, is their slick systems. I really like them. Developers like them, staff likes them, because you essentially, instead of going and mitigating for a site, following it for 5 years, doing a wetland report on it to make sure that mitigation is handling up every year after that, you go down the road to the wetland mitigation bank, you say, I have this much impact, they say, this is going to cost you this much dollars, they write them a check and you're done. And then we get that paperwork back saying they essentially, they're done with their mitigation requirements. And so that's actually, I think, a real bonus that we're putting in the proposed critical areas code. The second one, and this is one that I worked with the ecology a few years back on, and it comes up with my question to ecology is, what happens when you have a prime piece of developable land, you have a wetland smack dab in the middle of it, and so you essentially take that and you just destroy developability of a chunk of land within the city in an area that's supposed to be taking density. And so what we worked this through with is site subject to a development agreement, and I briefly talked to council about this before, where it's just essentially an agreement that's entered between the applicant and the city, and you negotiate out various things. So what this is, it would actually allow for the fill of wetlands in certain cases. And why it's tied to a development agreement is, and you'll also see in here, it's also tied to a conditional use permit, is ecology felt comfortable if we did that. They wanted some tight reins on it as far as if an applicant was going to come in and actually fill some wetland in order to accomplish a development and ensure that we got that proper mitigation back. And you'll see some requirements that the hearing examiner needs to approve before anything like that happens. And then the last one was, and this was a big one for Planning Commission, is what happens to all these neighborhoods that under the old wetland buffer standards, they build out right to the edge of the buffer, and now you've increased it and they have 50 foot of buffer going across their property. Does this mean they can't do anything with their backyards now? Or can they put a shed in their backyard? And so again, working with ecology, what we did is we added language in here that specifically excluded areas like lawns and roads and those previously improved areas, so it wouldn't come across an individual's backyard and they want to do some improvements, and we say, well, when you bought the house, you weren't winning wetland buffer, now you are, sorry, you can't do an addition on your house. And so that essentially takes care of that. And that was probably one of the Planning Commission's biggest issues, is this coming back up later down the road where somebody thinks they have the ability to build out an addition and dump. So with that,
okay. Questions? Councilmember Gamble.
I'll move to accept this first reading ordinance number 022-2017, updating critical areas regulations by amending sections 20.05.020.030.050.060.070 and 080 of the Monroe Municipal Code Title 20 related to wetland delineation, evaluation, protection, and mitigation, other minor amendments to provide clarification and correct errors, providing for severability and establishing an effective date.
Second. I have a motion from Councilmember Gamble. I have a second from Councilmember Hanford for the requested action as a motion that is stated or is written in Agenda Bill Number 17-154. Discussion on the motion. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. Going to have to think about how I can phrase this. Would it be, and City Attorney, this may be something from you as well. He's here to be just...
Okay,
fair enough. So, would it be beyond the scope to send a letter of notice to the parties in the East Monroe litigation just as a method of notification?
Council.
Because that's my major concern of us potentially being involved in litigation that we could avoid just by making sure that everybody's with it.
So, Council, the short answer is there's no legal concern providing a notice of a proposed legislative enactment to potentially interested parties. That's actually something that's expressly authorized by state law. It's not required under these circumstances because, with respect to the property that you referenced, the proposed enactment before the Council tonight is not property specific. It applies throughout the city's entire jurisdiction to critical areas on every piece of property, both in the eastern part of the city, up to the northern, to the western, to the southern. It's not something that targets a particular parcel or landowner. The fact that one or more properties might have an overabundance of critical areas and therefore might be more interested in the legislative outcome of this process is something that the cities can certainly consider. But my recommendation is that the council is going to send specific notice of intent to adopt to one parcel, not simply target that parcel in its own right, and it should actually send the notice to a particular group, a classification, like all properties that have a particular percentage of critical areas on their respective sites. That would be my recommendation. But the short answer is there should be no legal problem in doing that.
All right.
Thank you.
That would be my only recommendation to council. We have stepped into a level of litigation issues in the past. Misapplication of actions, I guess. So I would really recommend that we notify any parties involved in any litigation that the city could become involved in, just to protect ourselves and at least give us a little bit of protection, I guess.
Can I make a recommendation? If that's the council's preference, my recommendation to address that in kind of a neutral, generally applicable way would be to have staff review the city's existing critical area inventory maps and determine which parcels or large parcels would be most affected by this particular proposal, and then ensure that the mailing goes out to those affected parcels as a group.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Ben, just off the top of your head, how many homes are you thinking we would need to notify if we're going to notify anyone that's affected by this?
If we limited it, you know, to, you know, parcels an acre and larger with potential critical areas, we do have in our GIS, we have a critical areas overlay. It's not the most up-to-date. It's not going to say it's going to hit all of them, but it's, you know, it's halfway decent. It wouldn't be a lot of parcels. If we were going to take all parcels that were potentially impacted like this, we would take the maximum buffer just as a safety precaution. And you'd be looking at several hundred at that point.
Okay. I think we're fine just leaving it as is. I don't think we go notify all landowners about any changes that we're going to make regarding zoning or anything like this, do we?
We publish in the paper. We do it.
We do that, put it on the website.
Yeah.
So that's answering.
That's fine. What I was hearing is that we could potentially pass this and it would go into the vacuum of ordinance land and not reappear until we do a second reading or something. I wanted to avoid any possibility that someone is going to be shocked and our legal costs are going to rise because we're going to be sued for something that we can easily avoid with the earnest stamp.
An acre and larger, it wouldn't be too big of a lift.
But if it's being posted in the newspaper, that's fine. As long as there's some notification out, it works for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford still has the floor. Mr. Weld, would you like to go ahead and interject?
Please, thank you.
Yes, please.
So I could just ask staff a clarifying question. It's my understanding that the city does have a formally adopted public participation plan for legislative enactments of this type. Is that true?
The public participation plan, I have not dealt with it in my time here.
But as a general matter, the city does notify the public, for example, planning commission agendas, upcoming public hearings.
Correct. Correct, yeah.
So collectively, that would be the city's GMA public participation plan.
Yes, I'm sorry, Mr. Correct, yes.
And the city has followed those procedural standards with respect to this critical area enactments. Is that an accurate statement?
Absolutely. We actually noticed we had two public hearings on it, so there's notice twice.
Thank you. Just your clarification.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford, you still have the floor. Anything further?
No, I just think there's nothing more further to discuss. We tell us where we need to. We love you, Camilo. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble.
No, that's where I was going. Thank you, Attorney Lyle. This is an item that's been discussed for a year or more. We've had a couple public hearings. It's gone to Planning Commission, correct? So notification, I mean, there's been notifications in multiple meetings, in the agenda bills, across the board. I mean, this is how we notify, so I'm completely fine.
Any other discussion? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 6-0. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Swanson. The next item on the agenda is new business item number 2. This is AB 17-155, approval of Economic Development Advisory Board creation.
Thank you, Mayor. Council, the issue in front of you this evening is to review and approve the membership criteria for the Economic Development Advisory Board. We had presented the advisory board concept to the council along with kind of a bigger economic development strategy at your September 12th meeting. And during that discussion, a number of council members asked for additional information around kind of the formation of the Economic Advisory Board, its roles and responsibilities. And so we've drafted up on attachment 1, the outline for the Economic Development Board. So you can see in reviewing there, we've got some membership criteria that talks about where the board members would be drawn from, the types of businesses, the locations throughout the community. It also talks then a little bit about the responsibility of the board and how we envision this group to be working with city staff in prioritizing actions that will improve our overall economy in the community, looking at kind of short-term, mid-term, and long-term improvements. That being said, I just want to clarify a little bit that it's certainly not, I think, the intent to have this be the only kind of communications tool that we're using as part of our economic development strategy. I think we also outlined that we're going to be reaching out and talking with various business owners throughout the community looking for input. I think the purpose of this board is kind of twofold. One is to prioritize those actions that need to be taking place in order to help the business community as quickly as possible. But the second piece is, too, we don't want to ask people to commit long-term to serving on a board without a better understanding of what that board is going to be doing. So I think this is really kind of the first step along kind of a longer-term path to kind of bringing input into the city from the business community. So I'm here to answer any questions that you might have about the formation of the board as outlined in attachment 1.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutaback.
Thank you, and thank you for bringing this forward. I love it that we're moving forward and setting this up and involving the business community. So we had some discussion in weeks prior, so I think it's a great plan. It's a great first strategy, and so I will make a motion to approve membership criteria for the Economic Development Advisory Board.
Second.
I have a motion from Councilmember Cutaback and a second for the request and action in Agenda Bill Number 17-155. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Yes, I'm excited. We've got some traction here, and I'm excited with the way you've laid it out. Kind of let's start out and go see where we go from there. And, so yeah, very happy with this.
Thank you. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. Could you explain the location of your breath? I'm not quite clear.
So the attachment 1?
Page 1. location, the appointed members?
Right, so what we're looking for there is to get representatives from the kind of various business communities, and I kind of use that term loosely, and their geographical location. So looking for people that represent the North Kelsey region, the downtown region, potentially then business owners that are along the US 2 corridor, which is, I think, in my opinion, a little bit different than North Kelsey specific, and then the business industrial area that is kind of around the east and west of Rylands.
Why can't you open it up to all of Monroe and possibly the UGA?
So did you have some specific suggestions about where that might be?
Well, no, just you specified, I see a specific listing of business areas, but what if someone opens a business somewhere else? Not in this list.
Right, and potentially those could be covered by some of the other qualifications, I think. So I don't think it's an intent necessarily to limit, you know, where participation is coming from. I think it's just more of an idea about how to describe the area that we would be wanting to draw folks from. Oh, open to suggestions about how to reword it.
I would limit it. I would just say that if you're located within Monroe or within the UGA, you could be a member of this committee.
Yeah, and I think that the one drawback to doing that approach would then be having more members representing certain communities as opposed to saying, look, we really need somebody from the industrial manufacturing community. We haven't seen any applications come in, and so let's go out and try to find those folks to participate.
Okay, so that the next Amazon, Microsoft, Moving Books, Glitter and Ivy, any other home-based business that opens up in somebody's garage and is moving forward, you've essentially said, no, I'm sorry, you can't be a part of this. And they are the exact people that I would want to see.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent suggestion. So maybe in addition to qualifications, we could add in here home-based business or under location, just draw it out a little bit further and say, you know, anybody that has a home-based business located anywhere within the city.
Okay, I don't think the location restriction is a good idea for this one.
Thank you. But I do think your suggestion about drawing in home-based businesses is excellent.
Councilmember Rasmussen.
I think Councilmember Gamble is first.
Okay, Councilmember Gamble.
Thanks. Is first.
Yeah, no, I like the idea of a, you know, open for anyone, but I do think it's really important. I actually like, you know, the location concept because it's consistent with the way that we have discussed economic development since I've been on council for the last 6 years, of the different locations for primary growth from a business perspective. So I like the thought of making sure that we've got a well-balanced representation, because I wouldn't want to, you know, 15 members of just the home-based, you know, side of things, and we don't have anybody from downtown or whatever. So good suggestion from the standpoint of making sure that it's inclusive, but at the same time, I do think we need to have representation across the board. So I would not eliminate the location. I would just maybe adjust from the standpoint of making sure that we have representation from all of the different facets of the business community, you know, at large, which would include those locations, those zones.
Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. I agree with that. I mean, what I'm hearing is that these are really suggestions. And if someone, you know, that's not on this list or in this criteria comes forward and wants to be a part of this, I mean, ultimately it's up to council to confirm it. But I don't see, you know, just based off of that, why they would be excluded from it. So, you know, whether it's putting together an advisory committee or a board or whatnot, I mean, it doesn't hurt to have a little bit of criteria here, just throw out as a suggestion. So I definitely don't want to eliminate it, but I like where this is going.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutback.
That's what I was going to say. If you look at location and say it says may include, I mean, there's flexibility there. It leaves it open so it can include. I think it's good to highlight. I mean, we all have talked about it. Downtown is really important. US 2 is important. North Kelsey is important. The industrial area is important. So I think it's great to highlight them, but there is the flexibility of may and qualifications. It says is preferred. That doesn't mean it closes out other applicants. So, you know, I think think. Good job detailing this out, so thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, the goal here, as I had stated before, was to achieve balance across the various economic sectors we have here in Monroe. As you all know, we have about 7,200 to 7,500 jobs that are here in town. We've got a lot of different kinds of retail. We have medical professional here too. We have the Adventure Starts here with tourism recreation. We have a need for lodging. This gives us a target of the different economic industries here in town that help to keep us a broad-based economy with stability. And I think it's a good list. I like the idea of making certain that we look for somebody also that is sort of home-based. One of the things that we talked about was making certain that we have sort of an incubator business. We want Monroe to be a place where you want to start and also grow a business. And so I think that that's a good addition. Any other discussion on the motion?
I just wanted to make one clarification for something that Councilmember Rasmussen said, which is in order to not have this group be subject to the Open Public Meetings Act, there won't be a confirmation by the council. It'll be the mayor's committee, and that's the reason why we're looking for input on the criteria for membership.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. There's a motion on the floor to approve the membership criteria. Councilmember Kovac.
Just a question on that. You're saying that they won't come to council for confirmation, but it says that in the selection process.
Did I miss that? I apologize.
Yeah, so it just says that Mayor Thomas will review applications to present appointments to city council for confirmation on Tuesday, November 14th. So just clarify that.
The mayor said he would be fine with confirmation and have a group be subject to open.
So we'll just make sure it's not different than what, if we're approving this, I didn't want it to be different.
Yeah, no, thanks. It was intended to pull all those out, so I missed that in the review process. But it appears that we'll be bringing it back to council for confirmation.
So if everybody's okay with that, I think that that's appropriate. We'll just need to make certain that they're aware of the OPMA rules apply to them.
Okay.
Great. That will also allow members of the public and council members to attend.
Cool.
All right. Anything else?
No, nothing for me. Thank you.
Okay, so there's a motion on the floor, and the motion is move to approve membership criteria for the Economic Development Advisory Board as written in the agenda bill number 17-155. No more discussion on the motion, I see. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Abstentions? Motion passes 6-1 with Councilmember Camp voting against. All right, the next item we have on our agenda this evening is Councilmember reports. Snohomish County Steering Committee, Councilmember Scarborough.
No, I do report.
Okay, thank you. We'll go ahead and go down the line. Councilmember Gamble.
It's quite the week last week, but I think I was at the high school every day. For homecoming week, but what a showcase for the city too is both Como, Cairo, every major news organization was there on Friday to cover the homecoming game, which was a ton of fun. The football game was great, but it was also just a cultural event. We had friends that came from out of town. Kids at a tank at Glacier Peak, and they just talked about how after the game was over, how old town was out on the football field. It turns into just a cultural event for afterwards. So anyway, it was great, and then lots of businesses got to benefit. I know a lot of restaurants were packed all day Saturday. The dance was on Saturday, and then recovery was on Sunday for all parents. Throw the kids around and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, great week.
Cool. Thank you. Councilmember Kim.
Nothing.
Thank you. Councilmember Davis. Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Yeah, this is a follow-up from last week's proclamation for Leadership Day at Snohomish County. We listed out an email to everyone about the Leadership Day breakfast. If anyone's wanting to attend, October 13th. And then, Brad, this may be a question for you. Where am I? The day job hat, meet regularly with Senior Center Library and those guys down there, talk about our area. And one matter that's come up recently is the crosswalk at Sky River and Village Way. so.
Okay, take a look at that.
Okay. And that is it.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, thank you for the breakfast invite. Unfortunately, I will not be able to attend, because I would have been almost available. Nothing else to report.
Okay, well, thank you.
Nothing.
Councilmember Scarborough. Okay. Thank you. We do have a staff briefing this evening from our police department. I believe that this would be Deputy Chief Kinnear. Thank you very much for the
mayor and council for the report. First, we'd like to talk about the community outreach and enforcement team and give you the up-to-date stats for that. At this present time, we have 65 clients. We have had 15 complete chemical dependency assessments. Two of them have went to treatment. We had six that are working on for detox, or six have completed detox, so we're working on the other three. We have nine total there. We've got five new individuals in housing, and we're working on placement on housing another two individuals. The next thing I'd like to talk about is to highlight our proactive team. Our proactive team is two officers and a sergeant. They received information from an informant about an individual that was selling heroin and firearms. On August 25th, we contacted a male that we received information from on a storage shed in the city of Everett. At that time, we placed him under arrest for a warrant, and then we came back to the office and wrote a search warrant for the storage unit. In that storage unit, the officers recovered 10 rifles, shotguns, handguns, and heroin, approximately 10 grams. Of those guns, two of them were confirmed stolen at the scene. On August 30th, after we had impounded the vehicle that he was driving at the time, it was brought back to Monroe and secured in our impound yard. A search warrant was done on that, and we located two stolen handguns in that vehicle, as well as drug paraphernalia and firearms-related items. In total, seven of the 12 firearms that were located out of this were stolen firearms. Additional charges were forwarded to the prosecutor's office in this case. It's just an example of the work that our PROAC team has been doing for the last several years, and wanted to highlight a significant case to get a lot of firearms off the roads. So. The next thing I was going to talk about is briefly just some statistics. For the month of September, we had lumber lorries, which is down just a bit as an average. Our vehicle prowls were about our average. We had five. Our stolen vehicles, six for the month of September, which is a little bit higher than we'd like to see, but it's within the realm of normal. We had a real dip in April, May, and June for stolen vehicles, and it's starting to go back up just a little bit, so it's something we're keeping an eye on. And we had 18 traffic collisions for the month. One thing that was not put on your items that I would like to talk about just a little bit is we did have an assessment center for promotional examination for sergeants on September 13th. We had six officers that passed that examination, and the list was certified by the Civil Service Board. Comments that we got from the assessors, we had 12 individuals come in from other agencies to participate in this. And the comments that we got from them was the officers that took the test all did a very, very good job. We received accolades as far as the department, but moreover, these individuals put a lot of time and effort into studying for this exam and did an outstanding job. And we're very, very proud of each and every one of them. Can I answer any questions for anyone?
You've got three lights right now, sir. Thank you very much for delivering the report. And the first one that we have is Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Yeah, Chief, Deputy Chief, just so appreciate you and both of you and the leadership and the department. Love hearing your reports and reading them. And I'm so proud of our department. I feel like we're on the cutting edge. And when I get asked by people about the police department. A lot of praise for the whole department. And appreciate the difference that we're making in our community. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Councilmember Pettibeck.
Just thank you. I think these are great numbers. You know, when you talked about them before, 15 and completed chemical dependency assessment. I mean, the numbers don't sound like a lot, but this is really hard work, and I think we're making a difference, so thank you. And then I have one question about the stats. So those are the numbers of vehicle problems, vehicle theft. How are we doing at making arrests on those? Is that the arrests, or are those the incidents?
Those are the incidents.
Okay.
Arrests depend on a lot of different circumstances. I do not have the stats on how many arrests at this time. I can certainly look into that.
Just curious how we're making a dent in that. And then the collisions, do you have a sense where the majority are occurring? Is it Highway 2, or is it kind of all over?
The majority of the collisions are on Highway 2. Generally rear-end collisions. People just not getting stopped fast enough and running into the car in front of them.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Deputy Chief, thank you for this presentation. And yeah, like Councilmember Hanford and Quebec have mentioned, kudos to you and the department. I mean, the community outreach enforcement team, 51% success with the clients reached so far. Just since June, that's, in my opinion, a pretty great success rate. So, thank you for that, and thanks to your team.
Thank you. I am going to speak for the chief here because I know that it's his feelings too. We're very, very proud of the quality of officers that we have working in the city.
Thank you very much, Deputy Chief.
Thank you.
All right, we'll go ahead and do a round of horn out there. Mr. Worth and Mr. Farrell.
Thank you, Mayor and Community Council. One thing I'm sort of working to do is an event that's coming up. There's a company called DaVita. They're an international company. They make medical devices, including dialysis equipment, machines. They're having a five-day bicycle event. They've been doing this for 11 years. It's moved from state to state. And this year, they do this five-day bicycle event as a way to increase awareness around kidney disease. And this year, they're coming to Washington State, and we're going to be hosting them in Sky River Park on October 7th through the 9th, so this weekend. And then there will be at Sky River Park in Burlington, October 9th through 11th. And the participants of this bicycle race, or bicycle event, I should say, are all employees of DaVita, and they're riding their bicycles 60 to 100 miles a day to educate and raise money through pledges for their event. So we're expecting about 600 bicycle riders and their support staff that will be participating in this. They'll set up and stay, and they've already been setting up this week, so there'll be more set up as the week progresses. They'll be staying overnight in Discover Park in reserved field, parking, and covered areas. The park pathways, the restrooms, Wigley Field, playground area, and Rotary Field and its parking lot will remain open to the public through this event. So anyways, it feels pretty honored that they've chosen the row. And as you all know, we have quite a network of road and bicycle paths in our region, and just really need to, we're getting that sort of attention to our area.
Thank you, Mr. Farrell. Mr. Swanson.
Great. Just one thing. October 23rd from 6 to 7 p.m. we'll be having our open house to kick off our code development, so our major overhaul of the city's code. And so that is just before a planning commission meeting. And so what that'll do is allow people to come from 6 to 7 and just discuss with staff and anybody else who wants to show up about the proposed code update, give their feedback, and then at 7 o'clock we start a planning commission meeting. They can actually provide some testimony or input on what they would like to see, so we'll actually have a document in the minutes. And so we'll be advertising for that, both on the city's Facebook page, we sent out flyers in the utility billing, and also on the road this week.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Ms. Hassard.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I left tonight on the diet for your replacement page for the budget. So what we're going to do is, as we have, if we have updates and the replacement pages, you'll notice down in the corner, you'll see, in this case, 37-A, so you know which one is which. And then also, I do have binders for those of you that would like us to bind you the new budget document for you. If you would like that, just leave the document with me, and I'll hold punch it and take it back to you.
Thank you. Mr. Fowler.
Something to add.
All right. Thank you. Chief.
Yes.
Further. All right.
The item I have is just covering what we have planned for the upcoming agenda. So on October 10th, we're looking at a contract with the Department of Enterprise Services. That's for the continued implementation of the city's wastewater treatment plant. We will be talking with the council about Washington ATVs on city streets. We've had a request from community members to consider that again. So we will be bringing forward a discussion item for input from the council. And then finally, the star of the show is going to be the budget presentation. So staff is certainly excited about that. Look forward to sharing what we've got in the mayor's recommended budget. On the 17th, we are looking at the East Monroe interim zoning. So just updating that one more time for interim zoning. Representative Carolyn Eslick has been recently appointed to her position, and so she will be coming and doing an introduction with the city council, just introducing herself to the community here. Then we'll have the tax levy, some contracts, and then finally our legislative priorities for 2018. Any questions?
No, I've seen.
Thank you.
Do you want to talk a little bit about the
Does it hit for us?
Yes.
I'd be glad to. We were notified by a stakeholder who has been working with the city for a while that the county's recommended budget, the county executive recommended budget, didn't include funding for the Centennial Trail connection between Snohomish and Monroe, and that it appears that that funding had gotten reallocated to a project that's new, which is a trail connection between Everett and Snohomish. So Mr. Farrell and I, Mr. Farrell and I met today with Tom Tigan and his staff from the County Parks Department out at the site where the East Mason rebuilding is to talk just a little bit about the county's long-range plans, both for the Centennial Trail connection and then also just in general, you know, what is the county doing for parks out here in kind of the East Monroe, East County region. And I think at the end of that conversation, Mike and I had a follow-up just together, and I think we're recommending to the mayor and to the city council both that we submit a letter to Snohomish County letting them know that we're really interested in continuing to fund the project between Snohomish and Monroe. And in my experience, one of the things that kind of moves these funding requests along is to ask for something specific. And so rather than just saying $250,000 to go towards the Centennial Trail, Mike recommended, and I agree, that we should probably be focused on doing the design work for the crossing at Dolchuk. So we need a bridge at that location. $250,000 would probably get us that bridge design. So we'll be submitting that letter of request to the county. We've also asked them, the Centennial Trail Coalition, to support us in that request, and we'll be reaching out to Snohomish, City of Snohomish as well.
All right. Thank you very much. Does anybody have anything else for the good of the order? All right. Anything further, Ms. King?
Nothing for me.
Okay. That's all the votes that we have this evening. Councilmember Gamble.
Yeah,
motion to adjourn from Councilmember Gamble, a second from Councilmember Rasmus, and a discussion on the motion to adjourn. Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 7-0. We're on.